55 past the hour, sponsored by Young Express. If you're looking for a new gig or new career, check them out at youngexpress.com. See Sparky Fiper with you here on 1250 AM The Fan. Time for our weekly chat with our guy, Tim Dillard, Bally Sports Wisconsin analyst. It's sponsored by Robert Hack Diamonds, where they pay cash for your gold. Visit them at roberthackdiamonds.com. Tim Dillard joins us in studio. All right, so let's cut to the chase a little bit here. Garrett Mitchell makes his debut for the Brewers, comes up clutch in a couple of different situations. Since then, now has slowed down a little bit, probably to be expected, I would think, with a rookie.
Absolutely. I mean, I asked Colton Wong on our Brewers podcast last week of just what's the hardest thing from AAA to the big leagues, and he says the pitching. The pitching has a plan, and they execute it at a higher rate than, obviously, the minor leagues. That's why I was stuck in the minor leagues so long. But that's kind of what the result is. He's just seeing stuff that he hasn't really come across before, because these pitchers get to the big leagues for a reason. They have certain weapons that they throw out there. And I think he's just a little gun-shy right now. The strikeouts, like, looking, he's very hesitant because it's, you know, you got to make that decision. Am I going to go for it, or, you know, am I going to be holding back? So I think that's what he's saying. I think you're going to see a coach come alongside him and just say, dude, let it rip. Let it rip. You've done this before. And just, you almost have to have permission as a young guy to sit there and say, okay, you need to take some risks. Go ahead and swing.
If you strike out, you strike out.
Right.
And that's probably a large part of it. You know, the other thing too is, and we were talking about this last week when we had the conversation, we're talking about Christian Yelich and how he's coming. And now we were starting to see maybe a little bit more of the power from Christian Yelich as well in that Cubs series. Now, again, he's played the Cubs really well this year. So maybe you look at it and go, it's just an opponent thing, or you look at it and go, okay, maybe he's starting to find that power that he really hasn't had most of the year.
Yeah, he crushes the Cubs and the Reds.
Yep.
So I don't know.
Too.
Yeah, watch out, Cleveland, if you play Cleveland. No, I don't know. I think what we're seeing is just a healthy Christian Yelich. I know he missed some time with a neck issue, but for the most part, I think he played in 117 games last year, and he's already at like 122 or something like that.
More than last year. Yeah.
Yeah, so with a chance to play over 150 games, and that's a big deal, especially moving forward, because a lot of the times he's hitting the ball harder than almost anyone in Major League Baseball, except there's someone at the end standing in the exact same spot being able to catch the ball. So I know we've talked about this before. I think it's going to be next year, you're going to see a lot of these guys that are victims of the shift kind of go off. But what I love is that Christian Yelich is willing to go outside the norm. He's kind of been the leader early on in the season, right around the halfway point, where he said, I'm going to start hitting the ball opposite field. And just, if it's a single, it's a single. And he gets on base, drives pitchers insane. Next thing you know, there's the big double or the big home run.
What about some of the starting pitching to this point? Corbin Burnes, you know, you look at his numbers last three or four starts, haven't been exactly Cy Young-like Corbin Burnes. Everybody's going to go through this, I think, throughout the course of the season. Obviously, you'd like to have him be in Cy Young form, start in, start out. That hasn't been the case. Have you picked up on anything from Burnes that may have changed here the last few starts?
Well, I mean, maybe if I was a pitching coach, from what I can see in his last four starts, the slider, batters are hitting 600 against his slider, and they're batting 347 versus cutter. But his changeup and his curveball are really good, even the four-seamer as well. But so what that tells me is that hitters left and right are walking up to the plate, and they're just going to see they're going to see that similar angle, where if you're a right-handed hitter, it's going to come in, it's going to be hard, and it's going to break away from you and possibly down a little bit. So if you said, hey, four out of five pitches you see in this at-bat are going to have this similar break, and it's going to be right around here, and it's going to be between 85 and 95. Hitters are going to have a pretty good shot at doing something at that. That's why the changeup has been so effective, because it's going the opposite direction, and it's not similar to the cutter or the slider. So if I had to say one thing to Burnes, that's what I would say. I'd be like, dude, they are sitting on this. And I think he knows it, and I think he's trying to be more particular. That's why you've seen the walks go up recently. I think he's had 8 walks his last 20 innings. That's actually quite high for him. And so that's what I would say. I would say you can't throw something in this realm right now, because guys are just sitting on it and you're giving them a chance.
So leading up to a start, I mean, I've seen it numerous times being in the clubhouse over the course of the last decade or so, where you walk in and you see the catcher and the starting pitcher sitting there looking at film together and kind of game planning of what they're going to do. Then the pitching coach walks up, then they all have the conversation. When does the stat come up that you just threw out there about, hey guys, last 3 or 4 starts, like, who brings up that stat to who? When does it come up? Or maybe does that not get looked at until it goes on a little bit further?
Well, it's, I mean, the cutter is a fantastic pitch. His cutter is one of the best pitches in all of baseball. So what are you going to do? Tell your player, like, hey,
not throw it.
Don't throw this. You know, I would never do that. I'd say you got to throw it, but there's a time and a place. And if these guys are walking up to the plate, you got to put something else in their brain. You got to put something else in their head, and you have to locate it. It's going to make your everything else better.
So just don't throw it early.
Just don't throw it early. Don't be predictable with it. And it's he's been relying on it for, you know, 2.5 years now. So to have that kind of taken away from you has got to be tough. And I think he's searching right now. But if it was, you know, batting 600 against the changeup and then it was the cutter, that's a whole different, you know, statement to be making. But when you're talking the slider and the cutter, they're so similar, that just that has to tell you that hitters are having a plan against that kind of movement and what they're going to see because those two pitches are so similar.
What about Freddy Peralta? I mean, he's been working up in his strength. Obviously, gets pulled out with a no-hitter in line. Everybody loses their mind. It's 82 pitches or whatever. And I put on Twitter, I'm like, I'm assuming this is a precaution health-wise. That's what it has to be. There can't be any other reason. And now they pretty much come out and said, yeah, they've been very careful with him pitch-wise, and now they've moved his start to pitch in the doubleheader. What have you seen from Peralta since he's come back?
Well, I think if you just watch the game, you can see the velo that's ticking downward as the more pitches he throws goes deeper into ball games. I think they probably brought him back too early because they need him. I think they were like, listen, it's late August, September, like we need you. And we'll take you at 80%. Not that he's not healthy, but he just hasn't had time to build back up and be at that strength. So I think they're going to get what they can from him, and that rightfully so, because he wants to be out there. Freddie's, I mean, he that's all he cares about is being on the mound. But they're invested in this guy. If they push him too hard and he gets hurt and they lose him for the rest of the year this year and possibly some time next year, that's not being smart at baseball at all. So I think what they're doing is they're toeing that line.
How much of a say does that player have? When you're in a situation where you're like, I might be able to use one or two more rehab starts here. And they're going, no, dude, we got to go now. We got to bring you up now. I mean, have you been around? I mean, you've been around a couple of different organizations where a player has like, no, I don't think I'm ready. I think I need a couple more games. I know y'all want me up now, but I need a couple more games to get in my rhythm. Whether it be a hitter needing more swings or trying to test out a hamstring and telling the organization, I'm not ready yet. I need a couple more games. Have you come across that in your career, or is it pretty much every time the player goes, okay, if you want me, let's go. I'll figure it out at the major league level.
Yeah, I don't know if I've come across too many teammates that are going like, you know, hey, I'm not ready yet. Every once in a while, like if it's a stark thing where it's like I physically can't do it, but if they're capable, I mean, I've seen players that shouldn't be out there go out there and be amazing and be the difference makers. And they're piecing themselves together just so they can get out on the field every day. And that's how you lead. You lead not by going, maybe I need a day. All of these guys, I would say, are going, get me out there. I want to play. And the pushback comes from the coaches and the trainers going together going, okay, is this going to benefit us to have them short term, or we got to look long term?
Right.
But especially in September, you know, these guys are tired. Everybody's tired. But if you have a chance at doing something pretty amazing, I think that's where you, as a player, just go, you know what? I can sleep in the offseason.
No doubt.
We want to play past October 5th, yep. And that starts with me getting my body ready so I can go out there and play the best I can. And right now they're in Colorado. That's a tough place to recover from. You dive for a ball, you wake up the next day. It's not like diving when you're in, you know, Milwaukee or somewhere else. You're diving and you're not recovering as fast just because of the elevation. So these guys are going through it right now. Their bodies are hanging, but the drive is there.
What about from the perspective of what Lorenzo Cain brought up in the interview with Adam McKelvey, of course, who you do the Brewers Unfiltered podcast with? A great job. Check out the latest Brewers Unfiltered podcast. We'll talk more about that here before the end of the interview. What's coming up this week? I'm assuming some of this Lorenzo Cain stuff might be coming up. But Lorenzo Cain talking about the fact about, you know, since the Josh Hader trade, that it probably did change kind of the vibe in that clubhouse and so forth, and maybe threw into question in some guys' heads as far as where the front office was on this team for this year going forward. I mean, you're around the team far more than I am. How much of a vibe did it kind of change in that clubhouse once that Hader trade got made?
Well, the clubhouse is a very special place. I know there's podcasts devoted to it, I'm sure, and people hear rumors about what goes on in clubhouse. And I played 18 seasons of professional baseball, and there's no place I'd rather be. I mean, if my wife's listening, obviously I want to be at home.
Right.
But the clubhouse is just such a special place. It's amazing. To the point where now I'm a broadcaster, and I've actually had a lot of these guys as my teammates or played against them over the years.
Isn't that crazy?
And I don't want to go in the clubhouse. I've actually only been in the clubhouse maybe once all year. And I'm allowed to. Like, I got a credential. It's got a hologram sticker, says I'm allowed to come in, but it's their place. I don't want to be I don't want to invade their space. So I kind of, just because I know what it's like, and I know players are just iffy about the media in general. So I always hang out in the dugout and I talk to the guys. And, you know, I don't know what Kane said. McCalvey asked me if I read his article, and I was like, no. but I don't know if the Josh Hader trade messed up anything. These guys get to a certain level where they have teammates that come and go. As long as I played, I had a whole group of guys that signed around the same time I did, and we went through a couple of levels of the minor leagues together. And then some dudes did really good and left. Some guys got released. Some guys got traded, hurt. You break apart. That's part of it. So in one regard, you're going, yeah, we miss a friend. You know, Devin Williams misses his throwing partner. You miss seeing Josh Hader. I miss seeing Josh Hader in the dugout. That guy's awesome. He was my teammate. We were locker mates for a year. So when you see those guys not there anymore, it's kind of a bummer. But, you know, it still goes on. The season goes on. You don't sit there and dwell on it. Can it mess up a rhythm of a clubhouse? Maybe, but it seems like a very minimal move. It's not like they got rid of five or six guys and brought in seven new guys. It was, to me, a very minimal move. But you know what? He was a big part of that clubhouse, so maybe it was more significant than maybe it looks on the surface.
Talking with Tim Diller, brought to you by Robert Hack Diamonds, where they pay cash for your gold. Visit them in Greenfield at 76th and Layton, or their new location in Brookfield, roberthackdiamonds.com. Did you have that moment where, whether it be the minors or the big leagues, where you're like, okay, this is not just a game anymore. This is now a business? Because I think I've seen it across the NBA, the Packers or the Bucks or whatever, where you have younger guys go, now I realize this is a business, when that player just got cut, who I've been best friends with forever here, or that player just got traded. And you realize that it's a little bit more cutthroat than it was, it maybe just being a game to that point for you.
Well, I mean, I saw it in teammates in you know, different situations, and hard to speak into that because that's the nature of the beast, whatever cliche phrase you want to fit in there. But for me personally, there was several times I got sent down from Milwaukee to AAA, and I'm going, I didn't deserve that. I didn't. I'd been pitching well, and they just had to make a move.
And you had options.
I had options. That's... And this guy's coming off, you know, didn't. And I get that. I get that. And so I'm willing to accept that. But you start year after year, something would happen. To the point where I was actually in AAA in Colorado Springs for 15, 16, 17, 18. And I would say probably at least 15 or 16, they should have given me a chance. I was very open about that. Yeah. I was like, man, I'm pitching as good as almost any of these guys, just because of my age. You know, like, what's the value in a 35-year-old dude that's going out there flipping curveballs? But my walks were way down, my strikeouts were way up, and I was effective. And I was effective at 6,000 elevation.
I was going to say, Colorado Springs is not an easy place to pitch.
So, I mean, all that in my mind, from all my, you know, if I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible, I'm going, man, I deserve a chance. I deserve a call-up. And I did it well for, you know, 2015, 16, and 17, and didn't get a shot. So, yeah, is it cutthroat in that way? Is it a business? How much value do you have? I think absolutely some of that is involved.
He is Tim Diller. Follow him on Twitter at DimTillard. What's coming up on Brewers Unfiltered? You can get it at brewers.com and, of course, on your Odyssey app.
Oh, I don't know. We just filmed it a while ago. I think I should remember more about it. No guests this week. We just talk a lot about the season and what's going on. Adam McCalvey has some really good nuggets that he brought up, talking about hitters in August and pitchers in August. I didn't really associate that together, where maybe this is the hottest month for hitters hitting in August and pitchers having a higher ERA in August as a result. So I don't know. It's very interesting. He brings up a lot of those little tidbits.
Like across baseball or Brewer specific?
I think across baseball.
Really?
And I think historically that's kind of how it is, which, I mean, I believe him because he does way more research to throw out numbers than I do.
Ball travels better in heat, doesn't it? I mean, isn't that just normally the thing? The hotter it gets, the more the ball travels. In April, when you're playing in 40-degree weather, the ball's probably not traveling as well.
Well, you also build up at-bats. You're up to 400 at-bats, you know, 500 at-bats. When you start creeping into August, I mean, these guys that stay healthy, as long as they're up there swinging the bat, they've got their reps in, and so they're way more comfortable at the plate. Or maybe they've seen these pitchers several times. You know, there's also some advantages in that way, but I don't know. That's kind of what we cover in the podcast, is just an assortment. Obviously Brewers, but we're talking about a lot of different things that maybe you don't really, you know, come up all the time.
Have to check it out, Brewers Unfiltered, on your Odyssey app, and of course at brewers.com. Tim Diller, again, sponsored by Robert Hack Diamonds, where they pay cash for your gold. Visit them in Greenfield at 76th and Layton, or their new location in Brookfield, roberthackdiamonds.com. Make sure to check us out 55 past each hour. Hear the full interviews right here at 1250 AM, thefan.com. We'll talk to Tim again next week right here on The Fan.